listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. Come on, Dolphins fans. Time to fins up. Good morning, Miami Dolphins fans. How are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily on this Wednesday, July the 8th. With me tonight is Ian Berger, Biggie, from right here at DolphinsTalk.com. Ian, how are you doing today?
I am great, Mike. Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm looking forward to popping on every once in a while with you. So thanks for having me this morning.
Oh, it's going to be a weekly thing. This upcoming year, for those of you who haven't heard Ian on our podcast in the past, for the 2020 season, hopefully we have a 2020 season, Ian will be on with me on the podcast each and every week. The exclusive home to hear Ian on the podcast is right here at DolphinsTalk.com. So let's hope there's a season and we get to talk football this year, because Ian, you're going to be our weekly guest with us this year on the podcast. And, you know, we're in July, the season. Training camp is a few weeks away. Now, I don't know if you know, E, but, you know, my birthday is on Sunday, so you still got a few days left to shop for me. So everyone out there, too, who wants to send me a gift, you got till Sunday. My birthday's on Sunday, so please send in your gifts.
Well, happy early birthday. But here's what I'm going to say. When you're blowing out the 30 candles, because you're a young guy,
right.
When you're blowing out the 30 candles, you need to make a wish that there's going to be a football season. That's all I ask you to do.
Oh, that's the only wish. That's all I want. I mean, look, I say this a lot. I mean, NBA, I don't really care that much about that. Hockey, I watch it. I'm not a diehard fan by any means. Major League Baseball, I do like, but I'm not going to sit there and watch like 162 games anymore. I just love the NFL. Obviously, if you own a website like this, you love the NFL. If there's no NFL this year, that's going to break my heart. Now, look, I understand what's happening in the world and why there's no NFL. So, you know, I'm not going to go, you know, hop off a roof over it. But I would break my heart if there's no NFL games this year, because, boy, that would stink. It would.
I completely agree. And I hope that, I think we're in a good place with the fact that we know that Major League Baseball, NBA, and hockey are all going to be starting within the next couple of weeks. So I think us seeing the NFL play games is going to all be dependent on how these three leagues work out, you know, how they figure out when a player gets sick, how that's going to work out. I'm always staying optimistic. I'm saying that there's definitely going to be an NFL season, especially in this year when the Dolphins really, really, really want an NFL season, especially the fans too. So, but I think, you know, starting in 2 weeks, I think that's when we start seeing some basketball and some NBA and some, you know, some spring training for baseball or practice, whatever they want to call it.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. I think that's going to tell us a lot, and we'll see how it goes. Really. We'll see how it goes.
You're 100% right. Is sort of, if you are the NFL and if you are the NFL, if you are the union for the players, just sit back and watch. Let Major League Baseball, let the NBA, let the NHL make all their mistakes and learn from them, and don't do the same thing, essentially. Let them be the trial balloon and just watch them and sit back and learn. And hopefully if they do that, we'll see football this year. But look, there's a lot of factors involved, and we're not going to go through them all today, but there's a lot of hurdles to be leaped, but I think there's a very good chance we will see NFL football. As I've said in the podcast in the past, NCAA football, I wouldn't hold your breath, because that's just even more hurdles that have to be jumped. Okay, to start off the podcast, first and foremost, I have an announcement for some of you who are probably listening to this, may have already seen it online on our website or on our main Twitter feed at Dolphins Talk. We have a contest. We have a Tua Tagovailoa autographed mini helmet straight from Fanatics. That's the only place that Tua is signing autographs for. He has signed on with them. we have a deal with Fanatics, and I was able to get an autographed mini helmet. And we have a contest for the autographed mini helmet. And it's, look, it's a contest. It's very simple. I can't make this any easier. In this day and age, to do a trivia contest makes zero sense. Everyone's got a smartphone. Everyone's got a computer. You can just search the answer, and it's like, what's the point of doing some sort of trivia contest? So I made the contest simple. You have to, A, follow me on Twitter, at Dolphins Talk. Most of you already do, so guess what? You have to do nothing, because most of you already do. Well, you have to do something. The second thing you have to do is retweet the pinned tweet on my Twitter page. That's the contest Twitter page with the video. So go to at, so pet to my Twitter page. There's a pinned tweet at the top. Just retweet that one. Don't retweet anything else. Don't like it. Don't leave a comment. Just follow me on Twitter and retweet the pinned tweet at Dolphins Talk. And guess what? You're entered to win. And this will go through the end of July to July 31st. And then I will pick a winner on August 3rd. Now, there is also a chance to get 10 more entries. So you can have a grand total of 11 entries to win, not just the one. You have to do a bonus thing, which that's in the tweet, in the video, on our website. I'm not going to go over it now because for that, you got to do a little extra work. So if you want, you know, 11 chances to win, not just one, you got to go to our website. You have to go to the tweet and do the extra bonus thing. But look, there's almost no thought, almost no work in this contest. And I'm sorry, Ian, since you are part of our website, you cannot win. It's not eligible to people who are part of our website. We have to be fair. So everyone to our website, but it's very simple, folks. I can't make it any easier than this. So, you know, go to our Twitter feed. And for those of you who listen who might not be on Twitter, which I get, because we have a lot of people who have heard about us, you know, through our spots on the radio or through Facebook or through other avenues, Twitter's free. Just start an account, follow me, retweet the tweet, and you don't have to do nothing else, really, but it will give you an opportunity to win this prize. So for those of you who are not currently on Twitter, you can sign up. There's no cost involved. So it's very simple. So that's the contest. It'll go through the end of the month, and, you know, it's a great prize. You're going to win the helmet. Now, in the picture, it shows the helmet in a case with a nameplate. You're not getting all that. You're just getting the autographed helmet. That's it. So that's the prize. Everyone check it out on the website. Okay, let's talk some Miami Dolphins football, Ian. It was announced late last week about the NFL rules for training camp and what the Miami Dolphins are allowed to do as one of the teams. And, you know, it's not going to be a training camp like in previous years. You know, fans won't be able to attend. The media is going to be restricted. It's not the same. So let's go over some of these rules here. So if a player tests positive for COVID-19 in training camp, they must sit out at least 5 days, potentially longer. So if on a Monday, so-and-so fails a test, he's out for that whole week. He cannot participate in practice. The size of the rosters, normally 90 players in training camp, will be reduced. They haven't said the reduced number yet. Many people are taking a guess it'll be between 70 and 75. So, you know, all these teams are going to have to cut, you know, a good 10 to 20 players here prior to even the first training camp practice. Number three, no live tweeting at training camp for the reporters. Since there's no fans there, all the reporters who are there, which is not going to be many, which I'll talk about in a second, they cannot tweet, oh, I just saw Fitzpatrick throw a 55-yard rope to so-and-so. Oh, I just saw a sack, or I just saw this. The live, because I know most fans, especially most who listen to a podcast like this, you know, when it comes time for training camp, everyone's on social media following essentially the play-by-play, what's happening in practice. Not getting that this year. So you don't have to be at work trying to sneak a peek at your Twitter. Let's take a break there for a second. What are your thoughts on this, Ian? It's going to be a very different training camp this year.
Well, first of all, just the talk of training camp is exciting, right? So you gotta get past all the sadness and start thinking about the fact that there will be a training camp. Now, there are going to be all these precautions that are taken for the right reasons to protect the players, to protect the fans, to protect the players' families. So I completely understand why these rules are out there. Does it kind of make me sad because I'm one of those people that goes to all the training camps or a lot of the training camps? Absolutely. You know, there's nothing better for me on a Saturday or a Sunday, you know, during late July, early August, to go down to Davey and to watch the players and see how they're doing and seeing how they're gelling together. It's, you know, traditionally training camp too. It's not easy to see a lot of great successes, but every once in a while you'll find that diamond in the rough. Like last year was Preston Williams in a lot of the training camps. You saw him excelling, and I think that is probably going to what you talked about, how they're going to have to reduce the number of players actually at training camp, between 70 to 75 players is what that number is going to be. I think that's going to hurt some of these unrestricted free agents that really thought they had a chance to make the team. And now, you know, because of COVID, because of what's going on, you know, they're just automatically going to start being cut right from the very beginning. Now, of course, some of them will eventually make it onto a practice squad, and some players will make it onto other teams as well. But, you know, this is going to be a very, very different season than we've probably seen in a long time or ever seen in that case.
Yeah. A lot of those players won't even have the opportunity to fight for a spot, which it stinks. It's unfair. But right now, with everything else happening in the world, there's a lot of people who have sort of caught a bad break. And now it's just sort of affected the NFL. Because if you can only have a roster of 70 guys or 75 guys in training camp, you know, that's pretty much your first string, your second string, and just a few more guys. So for the undrafted rookies, you know, they're only going to be able to bring a few of them to training camp, most likely. Look, it's a tough break. But you know what? Life's not fair for a lot of people. And it's unfortunate for them, but it sort of is what it is this year. Hopefully they can sort of stay in shape. And, you know, next year they're still going to have a chance. You know, not all these guys. Obviously, some are just going to have to go find a real job. But the ones who really can play and who think they might have a chance, you know, next year this time, they'll still have an opportunity, I think, with most teams. And, you know, if a team really likes a player but just has to let them go because it's a numbers game, is what it is. So, you know, it's unfortunate, but it's sort of the world we're in. And it's going to be, you know, a lot of guys are going to take a hit here. Now, when it comes to the media and who's allowed to go, this is from the Miami Herald, from Barry Jackson. There's two tiers here. Tier two is only lets in a maximum of 10 people who can watch every practice from the sidelines. That will include local print, which means your Miami Herald, your Palm Beach Post, your Sun Sentinels, and broadcast reporters, which means, you know, you have somebody from your local ABC, somebody from your local NBC, somebody from your local CBS. Network reporters, that means you can lock in somebody from ESPN and somebody from the NFL Network, because they're really the only two from the networks who can watch the team that day. They will also let in one still photographer and one videographer. So that's not much. And I would think, I don't know for sure, you know, these newspapers have 2, 3, 4 guys that sort of cover the team. They're probably going to rotate it, so each day you might just have one guy there from a newspaper, because obviously they all can't go, because you can't have more than 10. So, I mean, that's it.
Now,
there is a tier three. So if things are going well, or if things are, you know, it's not total madness, that includes an additional pool of 30 people that will be allowed to watch practice. Excuse me. From at least 10 feet away from the practice field. So, look, who knows how they're going to handle this. It's going to be bad, but there'll be no live tweeting, no blogging, and no reporting of anything while practice is ongoing. And also, the reporters will not be allowed to send any text messages. So, you know, now they said if a reporter has a family,
they're going to turn their phones in. They'll be like, here, put your phones in the box as soon as you get here.
Well, I don't think they're going to make them do that. They're going to make them put it in their pocket, and there's going to be guys there watching those reporters. And if they see them, you know, take out their phone, I'm sure they're going to have a quick conversation and none of those reporters can lose their access. So they're all going to follow the rules rather strictly. But they did say if a reporter has a family emergency, they will make an exception. So, you know, it's going to be a very different training camp. And that live play-by-play that a lot of fans are used to and accustomed to, just probably not going to happen this year. Well, it won't happen this year, obviously. They said they are going to try to hold two practices where some fans, now by some, you know, I don't even know how they sort of pick those fans. Some fans can attend. Obviously, there's going to be a million rules, probably got to wear a mask, sit so many feet apart. They haven't announced that yet. That's still being talked about. So who knows? But, Ian, you know, you might be able to get into one of these practices. Maybe if you sort of cross your fingers and win like a lottery of some sort. I don't know. But it's not looking promising, I will say that.
No, but you know what? I'm hopeful. And, you know, if they were to invite me, I think that I would definitely go and take the appropriate precautions. You know, if the Dolphins say, hey, listen, if you want to be here, you need to wear the mask and you need to sit, you know, 6 feet away from the person that's next to you. I think if everyone follows that rule, I think it will be as safe as it possibly can be. And I would do that. I would absolutely be there and do that. Now, here's the thing. I'm one of those people that love to live tweet. So I'd have to sit on my thumbs to make sure that I'm not tweeting while I'm there. But I'll definitely maybe take some notes for myself so I can maybe write a nice little article or talk about it after training camp, after that day is over.
Yeah, absolutely. Just sort of sit there on with your shades and work on your tan, because that's all you're going to be able to do.
Exactly.
Work on your tan and sip on some water. That's about it. Now, in other news, there was a second article in the Miami Herald that was put out on Monday that I found very interesting, talking about the relationship between Ryan Fitzpatrick and Chan Gailey. You know, obviously, you know, most fans think heading into this training camp that Ryan Fitzpatrick has a leg up on the rookie quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, for the obvious reasons that, A, how last year ended and how he played at the end of last year, and plus he has a familiarity with Chan Gailey. But when you break down the numbers of Ryan Fitzpatrick's numbers with Chan Gailey, you know, it's actually not good at all. So I don't know if Ryan Fitzpatrick being familiar with Chan Gailey is a positive, as many fans think. This is from the Miami Herald article. Fitzpatrick has an 80.9 passer rating in 5 years with Gailey. That's worse than his passer rating without him. Under Chan Gailey, Fitzpatrick's numbers are actually worse. Fitzpatrick was Chan Gailey's starting quarterback for 11 games 1 year, the 2016 season with the Jets, 13 games once and 16 games three times. In those five seasons, those teams' total offenses, are you ready for these numbers? We're ranked 24th, 25th, 10th, 19th, and 14th. So aside from 1 year where they were ranked 10th, you know, those offenses with Ryan Fitzpatrick and Chan Gailey, you know, was bad. They were not good offenses, ranked near the bottom of the league. Let's see here. I mean, those are essentially numbers. There's some others. You can check out the Miami Herald website. Okay, so Fitzpatrick's five seasons with Chan Gailey would rank first through fifth worst in most interceptions thrown, with 23, 17, 16, 15, and 15. So Ryan Fitzpatrick's long NFL time, his five worst seasons with the most interceptions were with Chan Gailey. So everyone, which is why, you know, Tom and myself, we have spoken about this a lot on the podcast, E, and we think the same way. I want to get your thoughts on this. I've said from day one, look, everyone gets that warm and fuzzy feeling when they talk about Ryan Fitzpatrick and they go back to the Patriots game week 17, and that's great. I get it. Tua Tagovailoa was the fifth pick of the draft, and from every report, literally every report since April, he's healthy, including a report that was out a week or two ago. If Tua Tagovailoa is healthy right now, he's your starting quarterback week one. I don't care about Ryan Fitzpatrick come hell or high water. We drafted this kid fifth. If he's healthy, he's your guy. And if we learned anything this week from the Patrick Mahomes contract, if we learned anything, it's that building a Super Bowl team, you want to do it when you have a quarterback on his rookie contract. Because once you have to pay said quarterback and quote-unquote break the bank, putting pieces around him becomes much more of a challenge. As one player takes up 18, 19, 20% of your cap, you want to win with that young quarterback on a rookie contract. And the one thing you don't want to do is waste one of those years by playing Ryan Fitzpatrick. So as long as he's healthy, Tua, which from all reports he is, he's your starting quarterback week one. And when I see numbers like this where Ryan Fitzpatrick's worst years have been with Chan Gailey, it just, you know, confirms that even more. So, Ian, the floor is yours. What are your thoughts on this?
So I have a different take, and I have an opposite opinion than you do on this because, you know, perfect. I think one of the benefits, yeah, and one of the benefits that they've talked about with the relationship between bringing or Ryan Fitzpatrick and Chan Gailey and the fact that Chan Gailey is a new offensive coordinator is that his offense is not as complicated as the one that Chad O'Shea had put together. You know, so what that tells you is that things are a little bit easier for the offense to take. And you've got a lot of young guys, a lot of young, strong guys that are starting for the team this coming season or will be starting for the team this coming season. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for them to do well, for them to work well together. And here's the thing, too, and I think you can look at it both angles when you're looking at some of these reports that they're putting out, right? I don't think that article went into details regarding what those teams look like that Fitzpatrick was playing for, right? So all we can go by, especially us as big, big-time Dolphins fans, that we've watched Fitzpatrick all season last year, we can see what he did last year with a difficult offensive line, right, for most of the season. Some injuries that occurred throughout the year to some of the wide receivers, and then they came back, and you know, and then you had Preston Williams that got hurt, so you had to replace him, right? You brought Isaiah Ford in for a while. So what you found was Fitzpatrick was able to kind of transition and make himself better as the season progressed. I actually today watched the highlights for the last game of last season, which was the Dolphins beating the Patriots in week 17. And I just saw Fitzpatrick slinging that ball left and right throughout the field, you know, and there was no running game for the majority of the season last year. So it was really in the arm of Fitzpatrick, and earlier in the year it was for Josh Rosen. So I think we saw a lot from him to say he could probably get us a little ways into the season. Is he the guy? Is he the answer? Is he the person that you want to be the starter for the entire season? No, because obviously you brought in Tua for the purpose of becoming the starter for the Miami Dolphins. However, I think there's a risk if you start him from week one, especially with the way that this offseason is going to go. You know, it seems like training camp is not going to be your traditional training camp. We've already, you know, there's already been some misses during this summer because players can't work together, where by this time, you would have players working together every single week until they got into training camp. I know that the offensive linemen were working together in another state. I had seen an article about that. But then the report came out from the NFL saying, we discourage that, and they stopped. So I think it would be the wrong move for the Dolphins to put Tua in week one with the risk of him possibly getting injured. Now, if they say he's 100% healthy, I still think you want to sit him for a couple of games. So allow the offensive line to gel together, to work together. You know, you brought up Patrick Mahomes, and he is a great story, and he is, you know, the highest paid quarterback now in the history of the NFL, or he will be once this contract is over. I don't think anybody thinks he's actually going to be there for the full 10 years, but you never know, right? Yeah. One thing that is important to mention about Patrick Mahomes, he said, sat his first season. Am I wrong by saying that? I'm pretty certain he sat his first season.
He did. He did sit.
So you look at him as a success story, and you say he sat an entire first season, and he was a high draft pick of his draft. He was, you know, he was learning. He was the understudy. He was following the team. He was going through the motions. He was allowing the team to be successful. Now, of course, the Kansas City Chiefs, they traditionally had a good offensive line anyway, because the Chiefs were always, you know, you always remember the Chiefs were having a great running game. You know, I think of Priest Holmes, I think of some of these other guys, and that's a testament to the offensive line that they had. So he came into a good situation where that offensive line was gelling, even though he still made a lot of plays with his legs and he made some fantastic, magical throws that most quarterbacks cannot do. But I think when you're comparing those two, that's the thing. Patrick's, you know, he sat on the bench for a year. He learned it all. So by the time he came in, he was very strong and he knew that system. Now, I'm not saying that Tua should sit the entire first season. I don't think you want to do that. And I don't think anyone in Miami wants to do that unless the medicals say that he should. But I also don't think that you should start him game one just because that really brings that risk even higher. And let's be honest, the way that it's looking with possibly only two preseason games or no preseason games, those first 4 weeks in the NFL are going to be sloppy. No questions in my mind. You know, if we get a full NFL season and there's a shortened preseason, I have a feeling that there's going to be some rust that some of these guys are going to have to brush off those first couple of games before we're really going full speed ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And I understand your point. And honestly, you'll probably be right because they probably are going to start Ryan Fitzpatrick. The one thing I'll push back on with the comparison to Pat Mahomes is when Pat Mahomes went to the Chiefs are already a playoff team. So they had the luxury to sit the young kid because they already had Alex Smith, who led them to the playoffs before, who was going to lead them to the playoffs that year. They were in a spot where they were already a, you know, very good team inside the AFC, a very good team inside the NFL, and they were, you know, not drafting Mahomes to rebuild. They were just getting ready for the quarterback of the future, but they were already a contender without Smith. The Miami Dolphins are in a totally different place. They are a rebuilding team. Their future is with Tua. And Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, after this year, probably has no future with the Dolphins. So the sooner you can move on from Fitzpatrick, the better. Because those two comparisons, well, I understand everything you're saying with Pat Mahomes, are not the same. Because they are in year two of a rebuilding year in Miami. Well, the Chiefs were trying to win a Super Bowl. So, but I understand what you're saying. And look, you're probably going to be right. They're probably going to start Fitzpatrick week one. But if it were me, I would, you know what? The thing here with Tua is this. If we as fans have to worry so much about him being hit and possibly a lackluster offensive line, this is going to fail from the get-go because this is the NFL and you can't hide someone and you can't wrap them up in bubble wrap. So we already made a mistake if we got to be that nervous of him being hit behind, you know, an offensive line that might be shaky. That's number one. And number two, if you want to teach any player to throw the ball quickly, put him out there behind an offensive line that's a little bit shaky, he'll be motivated to get the ball out of his hands really quick. So there is a little bit of throwing guys into the, you know, into the water and to see if they can sink or swim. That would be me on this. We'll see. But I suspect you're right. They're going to go with Fitzpatrick for however many games and sort of ease him into it to a – I just wouldn't do it that way because I don't think there's anything to be gained. But we'll see. Who knows? With the way this offseason is going to go, yeah, and there's not going to be any preseason games either. It's just going to be so weird and so not normal. Any million things could happen. So we'll just sort of sit back and see. But it was worth mentioning, though, because that article, everyone's got this notion that, you know, Fitzpatrick and Chan Gailey reunited again. Yeah, well, when they were reunited for 5 years in the past, they sort of stunk together. So I don't know what people expect this year in Miami with those two being reunited again. Not exactly putting back together the Beatles, if you know what I'm saying. So let's get to the mailbag. Cool.
Here comes the Dolphins talk.
Mailbag, got your email, faxes, and your notes. Here comes
the Dolphins talk.
Mailbag, gotta read some for all you folks.
All right, our first mailbag question comes from Austin in Bay City, Michigan. Should the Miami Dolphins sign Cam Wake to a one-year deal and bring him to Miami this season as a rotational pass rusher? Ian, I'll let you answer this one first here from Austin.
So I actually said yes. I said the exact same idea as Austin said, and I recommended it about a month or two ago. I tweeted that exact point out, and I did get some folks that agreed with the idea, and then I had some other folks that said that would really make the team go backwards a little bit, you know. But in my opinion, he is a veteran player. He still has some motor left. You know, while he was still with the Dolphins when he was with us the last season he was here, he was really a third down pass rusher. So if it fits, if it makes sense, I would absolutely say yes, do it. If it doesn't work and it's not something that makes sense, but, you know, Cam cannot find a home, my recommendation would be sign him to a one-day contract so he can retire as a Dolphin. But those would be my two options.
Yeah, I think signing him to the one-day contract so he can retire will happen whenever he does retire. I would not be in a rush to sign him to a one-year deal. As I just said, we are a rebuilding team. This is year two of a rebuild. Yeah. And to put a player of his age out there just takes away playing time and snaps from a younger player who possibly will be here when the Miami Dolphins are good. And he's sort of a progress blocker. You want the younger guys to get the reps. You want the younger guys to get the snaps. If the Miami Dolphins were a contender, or if you thought they had a chance to win, you know, the AFC East, which I know some fans think they can win, and, you know, it's possible, but you don't sort of pencil them in now prior to the year as a team that you think will win the AFC East or make a run far in the playoffs. Then, yes, obviously you sign them and you bring them back to Miami, but, you know, they're it's year two of a rebuild. I just don't see the fit. Now, if somebody gets hurt at some point or goes down and he's still out there unsigned, okay, then it makes sense. But I would rather roll the young guys. Let's see what the Weavers of the world can do or what the Strobridges of the world can do, who we just drafted. And I'd rather see them out there play. Let's see what they got other than bringing someone back, which we know who's on the final legs of his NFL career.
Sure.
Next question. Ooh, this is a good one from Chuck in Tampa. Is Kalen Ballage as bad as many say? I know he had a rough season last year, but how much of that was the poor offensive line play and the poor offense overall? Okay, Biggie, you want to trash him or should I?
You know, and I can see where he's coming up with that question.
Absolutely.
If you think about it, you know, think about this for a second. So we saw about six or seven running backs last season, I want to say. How many of those running backs actually had success behind that offensive line with that offense? So I can understand what he said. I think where we saw some weaknesses was when Kalen was out in the open and he was throwing the ball and then he would miss, right? Or he would drop the catch, or like in the Patriots game, he bobbled the ball and it ended up becoming a pick six because he couldn't catch the ball. But I would want to give him another opportunity because I think he's talented. I just remember, you know, him running, I want to say it was a 60 or 70 yard run against the Minnesota Vikings the season before. You know, so he's got the speed, he's got the breakaway speed, but here's the problem too. The running back room is going to be very crowded with talent. So unless he's able to show something in camp that says he belongs here, I think the coaches are going to have to make a really tough decision on him at the end of training camp, at the end of preseason, whatever they want to call it now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm not going to rip him or sort of pile on, because I do think in this day and age, and it just is what it is, with social media and stuff, you know, you make one play that's bad or a few plays that bad, fans just love to pile on. And sometimes they pile on just for the sake of piling on. Now, look. He wasn't good last year, Kalen Ballage. Nobody's going to put a positive spin on that. He played horrible. And last year this time, he was fighting with Drake to be the number one running back. This year this time, he's fighting with Patrick Laird to be the number three running back and to just make the roster. So one year, it's been, you know, his situation has changed. And last year, he was bad, Kalen Ballage. There's no two ways about it. But he belongs. He should get an opportunity in camp because he looks the part, he has the size, he has the speed, and I don't know what the problem is. Like you said, there was times last year he couldn't hold on to the ball. I know that the offensive line last year was bad. It was really bad. But there were times he would sort of get a hole or get an opening, and he would just stop. Like he wouldn't run, almost like he was shocked. He was surprised that there's an opening. What do I do? So, yes, he's so bad. He was so bad last year, but, you know, he'll get a chance this training camp. It might be his last chance, but he's going to get a chance to make the team. And if he makes the team, You never know what could happen because it only takes one guy to get hurt. Next thing you know, he's right back in the mix. But it won't be easy because someone like Patrick Laird, you know, he wasn't great last year by any means, but he showed something. He showed more than Kalen did. So it's going to be a tough uphill battle for him. But I'm down on him, but I'm not going to just, you know, slam the casket door on him yet. I think there's a heartbeat and some signs of life. It's just I wouldn't expect a miracle.
I just wanted to finish that topic real quick, yeah. Because I clearly remember in training camp last season when I was at those camps, I was leaving the camps every day saying that he actually had, Kalen Ballage had these great runs to the outside. He had the speed. He was able to avoid tacklers, and he was getting outside like both sides. And I was really impressed with the guy, you know, but then what happened? Laramie Tunsil got traded, right? Some other people ended up leaving, and you got a new offensive line coach.
He wasn't running against our defense anymore. And then he had to play some other teams who could stop the run.
Exactly. And that was another issue. But his speed was there. That was my point. His speed was just something that it's hard to describe. But when you saw him hit that outside edge, he was amazing. So, you know, something snapped. Obviously, we saw the whole team actually kind of snap those first couple of games. But that's the topic for another show.
Yeah. Hi, next question, and this is a bit of a fun one. What is your favorite piece of Miami Dolphins memorabilia that you own? This is from Kevin in Hillsborough, Texas. I'll go first on this one. Now, look.
Go ahead.
I sit in a home office that is like someone threw up Miami Dolphins memorabilia. I'm not going to lie. I should actually probably shoot a YouTube video on this and show everyone my entire what I own, because it's a lot and it's very impressive. Not to pat myself on the back, but my favorite piece, I will say, is probably, and I own a ton of autographs from Marino, but 15 years ago now, he came up to a mall in Syracuse, New York, when I was much, much younger, and I waited in, and it's like the second or third largest mall in our entire nation. And this mall is huge. I mean, it is gigantic. And yes, it is in Syracuse, New York. I know people find that shocking. But like the second or third largest mall in the whole country is in Syracuse, New York. And they had, for some reason, don't ask me why, one of the stores had an autograph signing with Dan Marino. You would think in Syracuse, that's, you know, in the heart of Giants country, Bills country, Jets country. Well, when I tell you, you had to pre-buy your tickets. And which I did. The line that day, it was a Friday night in January. I'll never forget it. It was a Friday night in January, snowing like a son of a gun outside. The line wrapped around. The first guy got in line at 5 a.m. Now, he pre-bought his ticket. When you pre-buy a ticket, you're getting the autograph, whether you're first or last. He ain't going to leave without signing. The line wrapped around this mall twice. I don't know. I mean, his hand had to fall off. He signed so many autographs. It was insane. I think the autograph signing started at 6. And, you know, there's a bunch of rules. If you buy a ticket, you can only show up with one other person. And that's it, blah, blah, blah. So I tell my father, who's not even a fan of the Dolphins, I go, look, it's a Hall of Fame quarterback. You want to meet him? He goes, absolutely. So he comes with me. So he goes, so when should we leave? I go, well, and I had no idea how many people are going to show up. It starts at 6. I go, I don't know. You want to leave like 5 o'clock? And he goes, well, let's get something to eat and leave a little bit earlier. Thank God we left a little bit earlier, because I was about, you know, 150th in line roughly, which got me in like within an hour, because they moved this thing like a line like I've never seen before get moved. You'd walk up to him. He would shake your hand. You would turn your head, snap a picture. He'd sign it, and boom, next. And it was like clockwork. Done. So, I had 2 tickets, so I got a few extra seconds with him because he had to sign 2 items. But I had an official Miami Dolphins helmet. Not the fake ones, not the replicas. I spent the big bucks and got the real thing. A real, authentic Miami Dolphins helmet. He signed that. And out of everything I own, that's probably my favorite because it was look, I had a chance to meet the king. And I met the king at a mall in January in Syracuse, New York. And here's the funny part of the story. So media is there, obviously. All your local stations are there, local CBS, local NBC. And he was talking to them. And I go home, turn on the news, I'm watching him talk. And he gave an interview like a bad guy wrestler, which was great. He goes, you know, he goes like this. This is Central New York. A lot of fans here of the Bills. Jim Kelly might own Sundays. I own Monday through Friday with all these people. And it was the greatest interview ever. I wish I could find it somewhere like on YouTube. He just did a bad guy wrestler promo, you know, picking on Jim Kelly, who he's friends with. It was all, you know, in fun. But it was hilarious. And it was one of the funniest things I've ever saw. So that helmet, I would say, is my most favorite piece of memorabilia. What's yours, Big E?
So I just actually got my favorite recently. Really weird story. Not weird, but a really cool story. I play in an over 40 men's basketball league, and one of the guys that's on my team, he actually texted me because he knows how much of a Dolphins fan I am. And he asked, he said, would you be interested in a Dan Marino signed jersey that's framed?
Yeah.
And I texted him. I'm like, are you kidding? Yeah. I said, are you kidding? He said, no. He said, I'm a huge Heat fan. I've had this Miami Dolphins signed jersey in my garage or in my closet, and it's just been sitting in there for years, and I was going to give it away. And I said, do you want any money for it? He said, no. He said, I'll just give it to you. So I got it. It's actually sitting in my office here. I still have to find room on the wall because we've got some other things on the wall, and my office isn't all that big. But I have a signed number 30, and I will be honest with you, because I'm not a huge memorabilia collector, it is the first signed jersey that I have ever owned, and I am so appreciative, and Dave is my buddy who gave it to me, and it's got the certificate of authenticity in it, it's got a nice little plaque with the name on it, so I was just blown away that he did that for me.
And that's a good friend.
I so appreciate it. Exactly.
And you better send him a Christmas card.
How do I meet this guy? How do I meet Dave?
You better send him a Christmas card this year or something. That's a good friend. But yes, I only have two signed jerseys. One of them is also a Marino one that's also framed and hanging on the wall. And I also have a Zonka one because Zonka went to Syracuse University. He's in town for events, games, alumni things. So he's very easy to meet. Up here, at least for me. So, Larry Zonka, I do have a Larry Zonka signed autograph too, because he actually did a big sign. So, at the Syracuse University spring game last year, because they didn't have one this year, obviously, with everything happening for COVID. Last year, prior to the spring game, if you showed up early enough, and once again, I always think who's going to show up for this stuff and I want to leave late. I left early and thank God I did. They had three famous Syracuse people sign autographs: Zonka, Tom Coughlin, Floyd Little, because they all played together in the same backfield. Dad, talk about a team. They all played together in the same backfield. You had a fullback, running back, and then a wingback, because way back in the 1960s, you had like a wingback position. So those guys were there signing autograph. Floyd Little right now is actually fighting cancer, so I want to send out a well wish to him. Hope he gets better, because I know for a while it wasn't looking good, but I think he's doing a lot better now. Hopefully he gets better. But those three are out there. And once again, the line, and this is in April. It's cold. It's rainy up here in Syracuse. The line of people to get free autographs from, free too, didn't have to pay, from Larry Zonka, Floyd Little, and Tom Coughlin was, it went on for like 5 miles. It was unbelievable. But it was a nice little perk by the school, and I was able to get some stuff signed there by Zonka, so that was a treat, and because Zonka's the man.
Oh yeah, no, that sounds like a great experience, and glad you got that jersey. That's something you're going to cherish for the rest of your life. That's awesome.
Absolutely. Two more questions, and we can wrap up here. Next question from Gio in Tallahassee, and when he sent this question, he put in parentheses, "Don't yell at me, Mike." Look, I'm not going to yell at you. There's no such thing as a bad question. So you can ask any question. I'm not going to yell at you. Although your question does irk me some, I'm not going to yell because I'm a nice guy. And plus, it's my birthday Sunday. I'm not going to yell on my birthday week. So I know we haven't played a game yet and the season hasn't started. But looking way ahead to the 2021 draft, don't yell at me, Mike. He goes there. What are the Dolphins' biggest needs still on this team and the biggest holes to fill? Because normally I probably would, you know, say something like, let's play the season first and don't look at the draft way ahead. But I'm going to be a nice guy and not even say that. Take out our binoculars and look way ahead to the 2021 draft. To me, the two biggest needs by far are they need a elite top flight pass rusher. Guys like Shaq Lawson, Agba, nice players, don't get me wrong. But they need a guy who can put his hand in the dirt or be a stand-up outside linebacker in a 3-4 who can just get to the quarterback on his own, don't care who he's lined up against, don't care what the scheme is, don't care if you put an extra tight end out there to block him. He's going to beat it and get to the quarterback. They need that young Jason Taylor, the young Cam Wake type who can just get to the quarterback on his own, and that's it. That's the number one need. The number two need, this one, I know some fans won't agree. They need a top flight, number one superstar wide receiver. And before everyone yells at me, we got DeVante Parker. DeVante Parker has done it for 1 year ever in his whole time in the NFL. Excuse me for not having blind faith that he will have a year like he had in 2019. So until Parker proves he is that guy, he ain't that guy. And when you have a quarterback like Tua Tagovailoa that you are putting pieces around, you need to get him as many weapons as possible. And a top flight, blue chip, no-brainer, sure thing, superstar wide receiver is needed. So one is pass rusher, two is wide receiver. Those are the two biggest holes this team needs heading in to the 2021 draft, which is a long ways away.
You know what's great about this conversation, Mike, is when we look at this team right now and the makeup and the number of young guys we have and the talent that has been built since, you know, over this offseason, the holes just don't seem to be as big.
Not as many.
They did for last season. Yeah, it is amazing what one season and 1 year can do to a roster. Because when I look at it, I'm thinking to myself, okay, we could use a running back. But do you want to take one in the first round now that you have, you know, Howard and Martin, you know, Breida, right? Do you need one now that you have these guys? And then I'm thinking to myself, do you need more offensive linemen? Well, you can always use more offensive linemen, right? That's never a bad thing. So my thinking was, I like your idea of a pass rusher because I think elite pass rushers are few and far between. So I think that's important. But here's the other thing, and I think this is a weird one that we have to think through, but I'm going to say cornerback. And I know you're going to say, what are you talking about? We got X, we got Byron Jones, we got Igbinogbani, right? And we've got Nick Needham. But what's going to happen with X, right? What's going to happen with Xavien Howard? And we know how much Coach Flores loves the cornerbacks. And that is one of the areas that the Patriots always seem to excel in. So if you have some good cornerbacks, then that helps make up for some of the other downfalls that you might have. But, you know, that's two positions. We're going to have what, another five or six picks in the first three rounds next year? This is going to be fun.
Yeah.
This is, you're going to have such opportunity to bring in young guys. And I would actually love to see a young running back. I know a lot of people were upset that we didn't get a running back in the first or second round of this season's draft. I don't think they'll do that next year. I think they will pick one up within the first two, maybe three rounds. You know, just, again, you get some young legs. You get some guys that are not going to cost as much money, so you can start thinking about, you know, salary cap type situations. So I think those are the top three positions that I envision. But so much can happen between now so and much. Then, you know.
Yeah, because
I saw somebody – I see these fantasy, like – GMs on Twitter. I had one the other day.
They drive me nuts.
Well, what if you trade? Tua and you trade Xavien and you get the number one pick, so that way you could pick Tua or Trevor Lawrence. I'm like, then you're back to square one. You still don't know what you're going to get with Trevor Lawrence. No, you know, he's going to have to learn the system, you know, so
it's ridiculous.
But I guess that's the great thing about Twitter. Everybody has an opinion.
Yeah, that's right. Everyone has an opinion. Here's some of the things you said, too. When it comes to pass rushers, yes, they are outside of maybe quarterback and left tackle. A pass rusher is right up there. And you can even make a case that a pass rusher is more important than the left tackle. Offensive lineman, what you mentioned, obviously that could be a need. If Austin Jackson this year, who I expect will be on the field a lot, you know, I expect him to struggle some. Yes, he's a rookie. Yes, he's a little bit raw. Yes, he had no training camp or he had no, you know, offseason program. So if he does struggle, it's expected. But if he's just downright god-awful horrible, then left tackle is a position they would have to look at again. I don't think that'll be the case, but something to consider. Running back, now they got Jordan Howard relatively cheap signed for 2 years. So he's going to be here for 2 years. Matt Breida is in the final year of his deal. Now, if he plays well and if they can sign him to an extension, you can probably kick the can down the road on running back for another year. But I know there's a lot of quality running backs in next year's draft. The kid from Clemson, who I don't know why he went back to college, and he's probably kicking himself now because he would have been gone in the first round probably, if not the second for sure. But he went back. That kid is the real deal, and he's as good as they come. But if you want him, you probably have to take him late round one, first part of round two. So that's the thing there. But if Matt Breida plays well, and if they re-sign him or give him an extension, you got him and Howard for another year. You might be able to wait on running back. You know, you mentioned corner and Xavien Howard. That's very interesting that you mentioned that, because I don't think that's a crazy thought. I don't think that's crazy. Obviously, Xavien had the off-season issue this year, wasn't suspended by the league, probably won't be suspended by the team. But a couple things here with Xavien. That knee issue, you know, it has flared up a few times, okay? That's number one. And as you get, and each year as it goes by, that's something you don't expect to get better in time, number one. Number two, his contract is very team-friendly in that if they want to move on from him, that the salary cap hit isn't horrible. That's number two. Number three, they just used a first-round pick on a cornerback, which means you can slot Igbinoghi out in his spot and then worry about the nickel cornerback. It's finding someone to play a nickel. Yes, it's important, not as important. The last thing is there's a name in this upcoming draft who I know every fan of the Miami Dolphins are going to want the team to take, who plays cornerback because it's legacy, and that is Patrick Surtain II. So if they were to move on from Xavien Howard, now look, he's probably going to go in the top 10. Who knows where Houston's pick will be? Who knows where Miami's pick will be? Who knows? And I think he's going to be a top 10, top 12, top 15 type pick, probably closer to top 10, top 12. But if you're the Dolphins sitting there in round one and Patrick Surtain II's on the board, you are going to see Miami Dolphins fans, whether they need a cornerback or not, are going to be pounding the table for Patrick Surtain II to have him in Miami. Now, if Xavien Howard's here with Jones and with Igbinoghi, it's not going to happen. They're not going to use another first-round pick on a quarterback. But if Xavien Howard's not here for whatever reason, then you got something to talk about. Because then I think it's very possible.
For sure. That, you know, and we can't forget about Nick Needham either. I still think he's got a place on the roster, and he may be filling in some nickel spots. We don't know, but his improvement last year was just so phenomenal from the beginning, from preseason to the end of the year. So I think he's going to find a spot. And you know what? If he ends up improving even further this year, who knows? The Dolphins may sign him to a longer term deal, but you know, we have to wait and see for that.
Yep. Last question we'll do. And we sort of spoke about this one a little bit, but let's answer this question from Andy in Hollywood, Florida. Obviously, rookies are hurt the most by not having a normal offseason, but what player in particular is hurt the most in your opinion? I'll say it, and I just sort of mentioned his name. I think Austin Jackson is hurt the most because at left tackle, look, even if they play Tua Tagovailoa, left tackles obviously wouldn't be his blind side, but left tackle is still a very important spot on an offensive line. You're still getting, you know, 9 times out of 10, you're facing the opponent's best pass rusher. And I think that kid just needs, you know, as much work as possible, see as many practices as possible, to just sort of face off versus as many guys as possible. And I think Austin Jackson is being hurt the most. With Robert Hunt, he's being hurt some, but you know, with Robert Hunt, you can always move him to right guard, which isn't as hard of a position to learn because you can put Jesse Davis at left tackle. With Austin Jackson, I know there's names, but there's nobody of any consequence that they can put at left tackle. So I think Austin Jackson is being hurt the most.
So for me, and you know, I think the offensive lineman, we did talk about that, but I actually think it's going to be Tua who's going to be hurt the most. And the reason I say that is if you're able to go through training camp and the normal training camp, you know, then you could put him in and you could put a red shirt on him and say, don't touch him, don't tackle him. But also during preseason, if there were preseason games and you wanted him to experience the tackle, right? Because when's the last time you think that Tua has been tackled by a defender?
Last November.
The last, right, when he got hurt. And that's the honest truth of it, right? So I think if you allowed him to be in a preseason game or two, one series, two series, get him in there, you know, maybe get tackled by somebody, not on purpose, obviously, but just to get that feeling and say, hey, I can get back up, I'm okay, I'm not hurt, and then just kind of go through that process. I think it hurts him more than it hurts a lot of other guys because he's going to have to get through that mental barrier of the last time I got hit, I got severely hurt, you know, and no one at all can predict how he is going to react from the first time he gets hit or the first time that he's being chased by a defender. I'm sure he's going to try and run as quick as possible to get away from him, right? But I think that's the biggest person that is probably going to be hurt by this whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Will be the rookies by far. And those guys are going to be hurt the most. Now, look, I was going to wrap up the show, but as you were sort of speaking there, I see I am being attacked by fans of the Buffalo Bills on Twitter. So I just want to close out with a statement because Ben Vollen, who now covers the Patriots, who used to cover the Miami Dolphins for many, many, many years, put out a tweet today saying his top five NFL stadiums. Now, when I think top five NFL stadiums, I'm thinking, you know, it's a combination of, you know, pretty beautiful, you know, state-of-the-art type stadiums, VIP areas, top-notch food options. I'm thinking the best of the best. Number one on his list. Now, look, he's got the Packers, and that's just, you know, history and stuff. Pittsburgh's a pretty new stadium, and it's got, like, a great atmosphere, and everyone takes their towels and wave it. He's got, you know, he's got stadiums like that. But number one, he mentioned Buffalo. Now, E, I don't know if you've ever had the opportunity to go to Buffalo to watch a game. If you're lucky, you haven't. The place is an utter dump. It is made out of concrete. No amenities at all. It was built like in 1972 or 1973, and they have updated very little since 1972 or 1973, except for maybe the scoreboards. There's no nice, beautiful VIP area. The food options are stink. I mean, the place is an utter dump. And I said this on Twitter. I go, look, I know it's his list, Ben, and Ben's entitled to his opinion like anybody else's. But really, Buffalo, there's no atmosphere up there in Buffalo. And I got Bills fans are blowing me up on Twitter. I'm reading, what? There's no atmosphere. What's this guy smoking? What's he on? Look, yellow snow and vomit is not atmosphere. And that's what you get up there in Buffalo. The fans, they piss in the snow. They vomit everywhere. There's no atmosphere. They're just out of control lunatics who jump through a table. And for some reason, if you jump through a folding table, you're a fan of the Bills. I've never understood it. I don't get the logic behind it. What moron would jump through a folding table on their own free will? I don't know. But if you jump through a folding table, that's a Bills fan. They piss in the snow because there's snow year-round out there. It's never nice. They're throwing up everywhere. That stadium's a dump. And if you're a Bills fan, if you are offended by that, too damn bad. The stadium stinks. The city stinks. I've been there enough. I hate it. I can't stand it. And how anyone especially Ben Ballin, can say that's the, you know, a great stadium. This stadium's awful. There's always talk the team's going to move to Canada. They're going to move to Niagara Falls because they can't get out of that place soon enough because the stadium is literally falling apart. It's made of concrete and nothing else. There's no amenities. There's nothing nice about it. And they stink. That place is a house of whores. It's horrible. So if you're a fan of the Bills, you're probably not even listening to this. I just want to get off my chest. Everyone's blowing me up on Twitter. If you think that's a nice stadium, you haven't been to a nice stadium. You know, go to the stadium with a Cowboy stadium. That's a nice stadium. Go to the stadium.
Jerry's World is the place to be.
Even the new one for the Jets and the Giants. I don't have to like the Jets. That's a nice stadium. State-of-the-art, brand new. Hard Rock Stadium. I'm not saying it's the best, but it's very, very nice. It's been redone. It's, you know, it's a nice stadium. Philadelphia, they have a stadium that's pretty new, you know, very nice. Well, it's not that new anymore, but it's, you know, state-of-the-art, looks beautiful, has all the amenities. Atlanta, they just built a palace. Nice stadium. Minnesota, beautiful place. Buffalo, get the hell out of here. That place stinks.
So I'm just going to put a plug in for Hard Rock because I do, you know, and I think
it's a nice place.
I think I'm a homer when I say that.
No, but you're not. It's a nice place.
Tom Garfinkel, he has done amazing things with that stadium. The fact that they've got the, you know, the overhang, you know, the fact that they've got now this ingress and egress, which allows fans to walk over the cars driving to, you know, in and out of the stadium, which allows you to get in a lot quicker, allows you to get out a lot quicker. I mean, they have done, and they now have these, they have the tennis venue there, obviously not for football, but for other reasons. And they just have so many great things. So they have the different food, they got the flavors of Miami there. You know, you got everything. Now, of course, it's all expensive, but I think every football stadium has expensive food and expensive drinks. But the experience there is just amazing. And I don't know if Ben was maybe just thinking about how the fans are. And yeah, we don't have fans that are jumping.
The fans are horrible people.
But also, I think you have to look at it like he's only been reporting for 10 or 15 years. He didn't know what the Dolphins looked like in the 80s when we were winning a lot of games, or in the 70s when the stadiums were completely packed with just Dolphins fans. So he's really got a very small window of when he was able to see his, you know, the Buffalo Bills be playing. You know, the Buffalo Bills, the last couple of years, they're up and coming, right? They've been to the playoffs. They've, you know, they've got a nice coach finally, and they've got some great things happening in Buffalo. So the fans are going crazy there. And the same thing's going to happen in Miami. You know, if the Dolphins start making it to the playoffs year after year, that place is going to be packed. You're not going to see Dolphins fans selling their tickets to the away teams anymore. They're going to be going to the games because they want to go to the games. So that's how I look at it. Now, everybody's entitled to, like I said, Twitter's all about people having their own opinion, and that's, they're allowed to do that. But yeah. I strongly disagree with that, too. I'd rather have seen a Green Bay number one or even a Pittsburgh at number one versus Buffalo as number one. They don't belong in the top five.
And it has nothing to do with the team because the team's actually pretty good. It's just about the actual venue itself. And Hard Rock Stadium, you know, the past handful of years, Tom and myself have been very lucky to be able to watch a game in the press box. So I haven't had the experience of, you know, being with the fans out there in the seats and stuff. So, but last year when we went, there was a Miami Hurricanes game on a Friday night against Virginia, the Friday before a Sunday home Dolphins game. And we went to the Hurricanes game. We did sit in the, you know, in the stands and watching a game at Hard Rock Stadium in the stands. Look, is it one of the top five best stadiums in the league? I don't know. Everyone's got their opinion. But it was beautiful. I mean, it's gorgeous. First off, you got the overhang, you got the roof, you're sitting in the shade type of deal. The food options are outstanding. I mean, you know, you have amenities. You go to Buffalo, there's no amenities. Okay, I'm sorry. And just because the fans might get a little loud and rowdy doesn't make the stadium good or the atmosphere all that great. Like I said, yellow snow and vomit. That's what I think of when I think of the Buffalo Bills, because that's all you're sort of tiptoeing around when you're walking through that stadium. So just want to get that off my chest because I just looked at my Twitter and I got about all these fans of the Bills tweeting me, telling me I'm nuts, I'm clueless, I'm lost. No. You people just haven't been to a real stadium because you don't know what the hell else is out there. So just want to point that out. So that's how we're going to end today's show. on today's show. On that note, everyone, be sure to check out the website, dolphinstalk.com. Check it out. We got a bunch of new articles up. Podcast, as always. Of course, we got the contest that we are running for the Tua autograph helmet. You know, folks, I can't make it any easier for you. You have to do two things to win this helmet or have a chance to win this helmet. Just do it if you want to win a Tua mini autographed helmet. It's on my Twitter feed at Dolphins Talk. Follow Ian on Twitter at Ian693. Trying to think of anything else. I think that's all we got. If you want to send in mailbag questions, you can email them to me at DolphinsTalk1977@gmail.com. I think that's all I got. You have any final thoughts, Ian, as we wrap up?
No, sir. I'm excited about what's coming up. We are weeks away from the supposed training camp, so we will have some real live Dolphins players on the field practicing, and I can't wait. This is a long time coming, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, let's fingers crossed we do get football in 2020, and hopefully we get to see our Miami Dolphins play here each and every Sunday. Because look, all these other sports, like I said, I could really care less, but the NFL. Then I'll be a little bit annoyed if there's no NFL football. And by God, for everything we've gone through as a country this year, everything, which I'm not going to list all things, a little NFL football for 16 or 17 Sundays and then the playoffs would really be nice. It would really be nice just to get our minds off of everything. Absolutely. So that's all for today's show. Thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you again after a while.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.